New cancer research about a gene mutation will be published early next month, and we're getting a preview of some of the info in our monthly check-in on Science Headlines with Gemma Tarlak.
Gemma is Senior Associate Editor of Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. She joins us every month to break down some of the coolest science headlines. Gemma, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Hello, and a happy Monday to you both.
And to you. Well, let's start with the cover story of the December issue of Discover. It's called The Cave of the Crystal Maiden. Well, that sounds intriguing. What's going on there?
Yes. You know, this is the Indiana Jones movie they should have made. This is a great story where our writer, Will Hunt, actually goes with the researcher into these caves. He's like swimming through subterranean rivers and lightless areas to find this thousand-year-old skeleton that was the victim of a Maya sacrifice. And the researcher unravels the story using research from all different fields to figure out that the Maya were actually going sometimes miles and underground into these like caves that had rivers and cliffs and were absolutely lightless to sacrifice animals and also humans. And they figured out the reason they're doing this is because at the time, we're talking about 1,100 years ago, it was just as the Maya civilization was collapsing, and there was a horrific drought. So you're thinking, why are they dragging all these, you know, people and animals and everything into these lightless, horrible caves to sacrifice them? And it turns out their rain god, Chuck, lived in the caves. So it's this incredible kind of archaeological CSI where the researcher from the University of California at Merced kind of pieces together exactly how this poor 20-year-old woman wound up, you know, a quarter mile underground, sacrificed. And it's a riveting story, and we've got some fantastic photos with it as well.
And do we know why this rain god lived underground? Is that something the archaeologists have figured out?
Well,
seems like
you know,
want the rain god up above somewhere.
You know, that's the thing about gods. They just do what they want, right? You know, they live where they want. But seriously, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy. And part of it was Chuck, who is the rain god, is associated with the Mayan underworld. And because, you know, he could be a bad guy with the lightning strikes and the flooding and everything. So he was kind of a, you know, feared creature. And he lived on the edge of the underworld. So they think that's why the Mayas thought of him as living in this cave environment. But it's a crazy story. And one of the things when I was looking at the story that really stood out to me is we have a great map that shows both the elevation and just the whole topography, if that's the right word, of the cave system. And when you see what these people had to go through, you know, hundreds of years before flashlights, just to get to the spot, you can just really sense their desperation to make it rain.
Now, this is kind of a gruesome question, but how did she die?
They killed her dead. You know, there's been a lot of research done on her skeleton, and I don't want to get into the specifics here.
I see. All right. Mysterious.
Fair enough. A bigger question, though, was you mentioned this is a drought, a long-term drought. Was this some sort of early climate change or just a drift in weather patterns that led to this? Do we know what led to this crisis?
To the crisis of the drought?
Yeah.
Well, what she did was she looked at other researchers' work into this 17-year-long study that just wrapped a few years ago, looking at sediment cores and tree rings and all these different elements. And they just know that there was a sharp and severe drop in rainfall at the beginning of the 9th century. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, it was definitely a change in pattern, and there are all kinds of theories about that, but it's unmistakable. There's no question that there was this real horrible drought.
Moving on to a topic that's very personal for you now, cancer research.
Yeah. We have also a profile of this fantastic researcher, Joanne Wiethaus, who is just relocating her lab to UCLA now. She was at Yale previously. And she's been doing some really amazing work. And as it turns out, the reason I know about her work is because I'm one of the participants in a study. She does a lot of studies into this specific mutation that increases your risk for cancer. And I'm a cancer survivor myself. And my way of kind of like giving back, or as I like to put it, getting back at cancer, is to participate in these studies and just, you know, share my medical information and history in hopes that it can help research in general.
And then her research focuses on one particular gene mutation, is that right?
Yes, she and her cohort, I guess that's the word, Frank Slack, another biologist, they discovered a few years ago this specific mutation called the KRAS variant. And, you know, there's a lot of press about the BRCA, BRCA 1 and 2 breast cancer mutations. And we think of that kind of as a really bad thing because it really changes your breast cancer risk. Well, to put it all in perspective, the BRCA 1 and 2 mutations are found in 1 in 400 people. They do increase your risk of, say, breast cancer, but they're found in 1 in 400 people. But this KRAS variant, the thing Joanne and Frank discovered, it's found in 1 in 20 of us, which, I mean, when you think about the difference, 1 in 400 versus 1 in 20, there's a lot more KRAS variant mutation going around.
So what happens when you have, when you're one of these 1 in 20, you have this KRAS variant, what does it signify?
Well, there's the technical side and then the risk side. So the technical side of it is it means your body cannot control the production of a certain protein, and that out-of-control production can lead to tumor growth. So that's the technical, actually, science behind the scenes, what happens. Now, what does that mean to the average person? Well, if you have the KRAS variant, you're at a much higher risk for a lot of different kinds of cancer. And we go into it in a lot of different greater depth in the magazine, but basically, for example, having the KRAS variant mutation increases a woman's risk of ovarian cancer by more than 27%. It's also found in a lot of really unfortunate people who have multiple types of cancer. It's a very high likelihood that they are KRAS variant positive. And it also, it can affect, having the KRAS variant can affect how well certain types of chemotherapy work on your cancer. So it's a key thing to know, and unfortunately they're having trouble getting it accepted as a standard practice.
So if it were accepted as a standard practice, how would this affect treatment for people who have this biomarker, this KRAS variant?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you, for example, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, one of the first things they did was they put me through a whole barrage of tests looking for specific genetic mutations and specific identifying factors of the actual tumor. And if KRAS variant became standard practice, they would also be checking patients for that, checking to see if they have that variant. And then, for example, not to get too technical, but say platinum-based chemotherapy, it's one form of treatment. It's shown to be not as effective if you have the KRAS variant. So maybe instead of using that as the first option for chemotherapy, your doctor might try something else. And, you know, the science is very new. They're still, as you mentioned when introducing the topic, she's just presenting some of this at a conference next month in San Antonio. So it's all very new, but it is really fascinating. And I think it's going to really impact a lot of lives.
One interesting angle on this is that Dr. Wiedhaus has had the opportunity more than once to sell the rights to this test to various companies. And she has said no because she wants it to be widely available.
Yes, and you know, that's kind of really speaks to her personality. One of the things I really noticed when I was working with her as a study participant is she personally answers all your emails. And mind you, she had no idea I was a member of the media at the time. I was just, you know, patient 123781 or whatever. But she had really had a lot of personal interaction and a lot of dedication and real passion for this topic. And, you know, she doesn't want the test to cost $5,000, $6,000 like some of the other tests out there. It costs about $300. And she formed a nonprofit group recently, a nonprofit company, and, you know, anyone can get the test. You do have to order it through your doctor, and it's your doctor who gets the results. But she really wants to make it as accessible as possible to people who could use the information.
And there's been a long-term hunt for, I think at first we thought there might be a cancer gene, and now it seems like we're looking for lots of different cancer genes and indicators and things like that. In the scope of all those out there, is this one a big deal?
You know, I really think it is. And, you know, in the course of my day, I see a lot of journal articles, a lot of, you know, we found this, we found that mutation. And what to me is really striking that she has conducted studies with more than 65,000 people. And this keeps cropping up. I don't know numbers of other studies offhand, but I'm pretty sure this is one of the biggest overall examinations of a potentially cancer-causing mutation. And, you know, she keeps coming up to the same findings. So that to me says that this is really big. Personally, I think it's a bigger deal than, say, BRCA 1 or 2, which, again, get a lot of media attention. Some people call them the Angelina Jolie gene because she unfortunately has the BRCA mutation. But I think this is a big deal, and I think people should know about it. You know, whether or not they want to get tested, hey, that's totally up to them. But I think it's very important to know about.
Gemma, in our last moments here, should people who maybe have a history seek out this test? Is that advisable right now?
Well, I'm not a doctor, and I don't even play one on TV. I think that's something you might want to pick up the December issue and take it to your doctor and have a serious discussion. Quite frankly, that's what I did when I saw my doctor recently. I kind of harassed him and said, read this article. And then he immediately flipped to the back page and started reading 20 things you don't know. So I don't know how seriously he took it. But I think it's really worthwhile to read the article, think about, you know, your family history, cancer if you have one, and make that choice.
Gemma, thanks as always for joining us.
Always fun, guys. See you next month.
That was Gemma Tarlak with Discover Magazine. And you can see Discover's list, by the way, of recommended holiday books. We've got a link on the Central Time Facebook page.